Hamilton County has more than a dozen confirmed cases of cyclosporiasis, with more suspected cases under review. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the outbreak locally and across the U.S., along with the source of the problem, are Hamilton County Public Health Medical Director, Dr. Stephen Fagans. Welcome back, Dr. Fagans.
Thank you, Lucy.
And New York Times health reporter, Caroline Hopkins Legaspi. Thanks for being here, Caroline.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Fagans, can you start by explaining what is cyclospora? Is this a parasite we're talking about?
It is. It's a protozoan parasite typically found in South America and other exotic places that has slowly made its way thanks to international travel and actually international foods, especially fresh foods that come to the U.S. And so we tend to see Cyclospora cayatensis, which is the name, in the summers, between May 1st and the end of August. We see it each summer, and it's one of the causes of a gastrointestinal illness. We appear to be seeing the most we've ever seen this particular summer. And just like anything else, once you start talking about it, you start testing more, which is kind of difficult to test, and you start seeing more.
Sure. Well, and Dr. Fagans, as diplomatically as you can you describe the symptoms people experience when they get infected with this?
Yeah. And so it's delayed. So you ingest like an oocyst, like a that has been excreted in the feces of someone, either through water or most likely through vegetable. It takes about 7 days to sort of form. And then you have abdominal cramping and the sort of wants to get out. Mm-hmm. And so many people call that explosive. I will tell you that many people just say it doesn't feel very well.
Yeah.
And so when you have to go, you really have to go. It lasts a few days. For most individuals, it's self-limited, but can sometimes come back. And in individuals who are immunosuppressed or HIV or have other issues, it can be more serious. And we had previously reserved antibiotics for those individuals, and now we're actually giving a little bit more antibiotics to those that just have that recurrence.
Okay. Caroline, how many cases of cyclosporiasis are confirmed nationwide? Dr. Fagans just mentioned that it seems to be more than ever.
Yeah, so the CDC is reporting over 4,000 cases that have been domestically acquired, meaning people got this parasite in the U.S. versus, you know, from wherever they were traveling internationally. But then there's another, you know, over 7,000 cases that the CDC is still looking into to confirm. So together, I mean, that's more than 11,000 you're seeing. So my colleagues and I have also been reaching out to states directly because there is a lag time between when the states report their cases and when the CDC confirms them. So altogether, there's more than 12,000 from our outreach right now.
Hmm. Well, Caroline, Dr. Fagans also just mentioned that we typically see this in the summer months. How do those numbers compare to what we typically see in the U.S.?
Yeah, I mean, even with the typical rise that you see during May and August, this is still exceeding that. And, you know, experts are saying they haven't seen this many cases in, you know, ever. However, there is what Dr. Fagans just pointed out, that phenomenon of more people reading about it, more people, you know, seeing it on social media, hearing other people talk about it, and then, you know, identifying that their symptoms, maybe I might go get tested. So that's contributing to this. We don't know how much, but it's certainly a factor.
Yeah. Dr. Fagans, Caroline just mentioned those thousands and thousands of cases nationwide. What are the latest numbers you have for Hamilton County?
So for Hamilton County, we're reporting 23 cases, and they're divided between 16 laboratory confirmed, one probable and six suspected. And that seems like a drop in the bucket compared to national numbers, but it's not insignificant. And it does suggest a more national issue, not just a localized issue that you typically see when you're looking at an outbreak.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Fagans, I know that Hamilton County Public Health has reported that hospitals in the county are seeing more patients report diarrheal illness too. Do you think there could be more of this out there than has been reported?
Oh, there absolutely is. And so most people don't get tested. Most people, if you go to an urgent care or a primary care physician or an emergency department, are treated symptomatically with fluids. The way we look at things is called epicenter. It's chief complaints of emergency departments. And so it's an overdose or whatever, chief complaints of emergency department. And so we did have epidemiology look and see over the weekend, there were 89 patients in local emergency department with GI symptoms, everything from nausea, vomiting to diarrhea and everything in between, if you will. That's actually not an atypical weekend. It's certainly higher, maybe by a few, but 89 doesn't sound like a huge outbreak.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we're talking about the cyclosporiasis outbreak locally and across the U.S. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Caroline, Dr. Fagans talked about this just a little bit earlier, but can you explain how is cyclospora spread?
It's spread through human feces, and there's no elegant way to put that. This is a bug that needs a human host. And so somehow, somewhere, human fecal matter that's been contaminated with cyclospora has gotten into our food system. There's an ongoing investigation, and there's many ways this can happen, such as, you know, agricultural water on a farm being contaminated by nearby toilet facilities, or most of these ways that it could get into the food system are water related, water on a farm. But we do not know exactly how this current outbreak started, but it, you know, again, it only spreads through human feces, so somehow that happened on a farm.
Yeah. And so, right. And it sounds like this, you mentioned this is typically gets into the food supply at an agricultural facility or something like that. What do we know about the potential source of the current outbreak? That's been kind of confusing. There were some announcements made by the federal government and then some changes to those announcements. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, confusing is an understatement. I think that, something I've gathered in this reporting and what many people are learning is that tracing these types of outbreaks back to their original source is really hard work. You know, investigators from health departments have to call people up and interview them about everything they ate and try to find common threads and then look into the source of that food. You know, if it's a taco, you know, where did the cilantro come from? Where did the lettuce come from? Like, you know, just it's a very long process. But right now we do have a announcement from the FDA that they are suspecting iceberg lettuce that Taylor Farms, the company based in Salinas, California, that sources that lettuce from central Mexico. So it's specifically Taylor Farms lettuce sourced from central Mexico that we know is a potential source of this. Again, the investigation's ongoing, but in the wake of that announcement, Taylor Farms recalled its lettuce that had been sourced from central Mexico. And we know that 25 different products were included in that recall. And some of them, most of them actually were food service related, going to different retailers. We do not know many of the names of those retailers right now beyond Taco Bell in the Midwest. And they've recalled all these products. So, you know, it's still sort of open-ended, but we do know, again, that Taylor Farms iceberg lettuce from Mexico has been recalled.
Well, and Caroline, wasn't there news of some kind of false positive for Taylor Farms over the past few days? What's that about?
Yeah, that added to the confusion. So I guess I should just caveat, what I've taken from experts is that testing a piece of, a produce sample or any sort of water sample, that's really not a reliable way to detect cyclospora, because one expert described it to me as sort of like testing a little bit of water from the ocean. You know, if you're looking for something in there, it might not be in that particular, droplet of water. So, you know, cyclospora might have been on a broader batch of lettuce, but not on the specific piece of lettuce that was tested. Also, the methods used to detect this parasite on produce aren't as reliable as, you know, testing it in a stool sample. So all of that sort of just to add context that this sample of lettuce that had initially been announced as positive for cyclospora, the FDA had intercepted it on the Mexican border and found that it was positive. They then retracted that and said it was actually a false positive. But the really important sort of takeaway there is that that doesn't mean that, you know, this shredded lettuce from Taylor Farms in Mexico is in the clear. It just means that that particular sample might not have had cyclospora on it.
Hmm. Dr. Feggins, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah. So the FDA and CDC, the process they use is called traceback, where you trace it back and all the local health departments funnel to the state health departments, which funnel to the CDC to try to get an idea of where something comes from. Carolyn explained it very well. I didn't actually know you could test lettuce for an oocyte of cyclospora. The FDA does a great job if you think about a contaminant in a drug, a contaminant in food, that their testing labs are outstanding. But they're looking for a needle in a haystack on a thing of lettuce. And so they rely on molecular testing, which requires amplification of DNA like CSI, which apparently hit as a positive, and then in confirmatory, it actually was a contaminant. Okay. Hmm. Usually, they spend more time testing the water, and I think Carolyn did a good job of really talking about it's usually the contamination of these little oocysts of cyclospora or others in the water that you use to wash the lettuce as you're preparing it. And so that's
or
why we're more concerned.
Fields, possibly irrigate the fields.
Possibly the fields. If you think about, you know, you get the lettuce, you cut it up, and then you wash it, that's really probably where you're getting the contamination more than the field itself, which is why the cut-up lettuce or leafy vegetables that are packaged, prepackaged, are the larger concern.
Hmm. Well, Dr. Feggins, what makes it so difficult to determine which food made people sick? I think you said early in our discussion that there is a delay from when people, you know, ingest this food to when they start experiencing symptoms. Is it a matter of, hey, tell me everything you've eaten for X number of days?
That's kind of what they do. And so you're right, it can be somewhere between 2 and 14, usually 7 to 10 days from where you've ingested something. And in part of that, you're ingesting the sort of oocyte, oocyst, which sporulates. And that takes some week or so. And then you begin to have symptoms, and then you begin to realize what this might be, and then you get tested, which could be another few days. And then someone from the health department calls you up, a disease investigator, and asks you, what did you eat a week ago? What did you eat a week ago? Like, can you remember this morning? And so they do have lots of different techniques, including with consent, looking at what you purchased at a grocery store, looking at your credit card receipts in terms of what stores that you purchased at and what you had, to be able to inform the local database that informs the larger database.
Mm-hmm. Caroline, I've been reading about cuts at the CDC, particularly cuts related to food safety. Can you tell us about those cuts and what, if any, impact they've had on this outbreak or response to the outbreak?
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, everything that Dr. Feggins was just describing in terms of how hard it is to do this type of investigation, you know, you have to call people up and interview them about what they ate, and then look at, you know, their grocery history and all that. I mean, that takes a tremendous amount of people power and resources and a lot of state and local health departments, which, you know, they're the ones doing this work with the people who are sick and in their locations. They just don't have enough people and they don't have the resources. And a lot of that is because they get their funding from the CDC. And we've seen CDC cuts recently that have affected that. So everybody is just sort of scrambling and doing the best with what they have. But yeah, it's definitely, you know, there's definitely a lacking on the state and local level because of the CDC cuts.
Dr. Feggins, do you think this outbreak kind of underscores the need for more robust funding for public health or more attention to the needs of public health or...
Lucy, everything needs more funding for public health. Come on. There's always an outbreak. There is always something. You know, public health is the thing that didn't get you today is because public health was here. Part of this issue may also be related to some cuts with something called FoodNet, which is the process that was decreased last year, last July, in terms of where data comes to the CDC and they collaborate that. We may have had some delay in recognizing that because of cuts there. The most important thing that the CDC does is laboratory. And so we all coordinate and work through our states in terms of what types of samples that we send so you can get genotyping, because that's how you truly do trace back to find things.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Fagans, you mentioned antibiotics earlier. Is that the treatment for cyclosporiasis? What is the treatment if people get this, maybe a particularly bad case of it?
Yeah, there is an antibiotic. It's called Bactrim. The longer name is trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole, so we'll say Bactrim. You take it for some 7 to 10 days. It's unique that that's one of the few antibiotics that you use. We actually monitor pharmacy distribution. In some cases. And so one of the things in a flu outbreak, you see how much Tamiflu is being distributed. We have not really seen a significant jump in Bactrim here locally. But once again, we don't have the number of cases that we're talking about nationally.
Sure. Well, Dr. Fagans, how can people avoid getting sick? I mean, I know a lot of people don't want the symptoms that this parasite brings with it. So how can people avoid this?
Well, you surely don't. And while I would say that if you look at the national numbers and you look at the number of hospitalizations, it's for confirmed cases, roughly about a 5 or 6% of people get in the hospital. Why did that happen? Almost invariably because of dehydration or, you know, making chronic conditions worse that landed you in the hospital. And so all the things that your grandmother told you to do about washing your hands, 20 seconds at least, and also washing your vegetables, you know, it does appear. There have been a lot of cyclospora outbreaks associated with, you name it, raspberries, cilantro, you name it. It does appear that this is related to green leafy vegetables. And so the ball of lettuce is probably safer. You take out the outer two layers and you wash it vigorously. There's even things you can do to scrub it. And of course, you wash your hands again. And so avoiding at this time, I think the prepared lettuce that definitely comes from somewhere internationally is not a bad thought to avoid getting that. If you do get sick, don't forget the number one thing to do is to hydrate.
Caroline, what are you hearing from the folks you interview about this? I mean, I think some people might think, oh, should I just avoid all fresh produce? Are there certain types of produce that are more susceptible to this or more likely to attract this parasite? Is it fair to think of this as being limited to certain types of growers?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky because, you know, you don't want to tell people don't eat your fruits and veggies. I mean, and you know, especially now when there's so many delicious fruits and vegetables in season. I think avoiding certain groups comes down to your risk tolerance and, you know, perhaps your health conditions. You know, if you are immunocompromised or older or pregnant, you know, as somebody who might want to be particularly careful about this. So, you know, the types of produce that have been associated with past cyclosporiasis outbreaks, you know, berries, cilantro, snow peas, and of course the leafy greens, the lettuce. I do have to say that I've heard a lot of experts speculating that it's probably not berries. I don't, you know, again, we really don't know right now. We don't have any definitive answer, but there's just no evidence right now that we know of linking berries to this. And, you know, that's a question I've gotten a lot, even from friends and family who are like, oh, you're covering this. Do I have to give up my raspberries? you know, I think lettuce might be a more prudent place to focus the, you know, prevention attention right now, just based on what we know.
Caroline, it's interesting. I think it was in your reporting I was reading that raspberries have been a culprit in the past, and you mentioned snow peas and cilantro, partly because they have these almost little furry parts that can kind of catch these, or where the parasite likes to hide, or where the little eggs like to hide. But lettuce doesn't really have that. So I guess it's just all about what comes into contact with this infected water.
Yeah. Again, a lot of it does come down to the water and, you know, the water that's used to wash the lettuce and irrigate the fields. And, you know, sometimes there's water that's mixed with a powder pesticide that's then sprayed all over the lettuce. But yeah, for the berries, you know, it's tricky because the parasite does cling to it, sort of. It has those grooves and pieces of, you know, furry pieces. And that's sort of why you can't really say you're in the clear just from washing, you know, washing your lettuce again, washing your berries again. This is a very, like, clingy parasite.
Yeah. Dr. Fagans?
So if you think about surface area, and you think about the berries having a lot of surface area, and you think about a ball of lettuce, that's not very much surface area, but then you chop it up and you create a lot of surface area, and then you wash it with possibly contaminated water. So it does have a lot to do with surface area in terms of where the clings to. And lettuce has a something, kind of a tropism, these little grooves that the oocysts seem to like.
Huh. Well, Caroline, very important question about Taco Bell. Our producer really wants to know if her crunch wraps are now safe.
The Taco Bells that have been affected by this said that they've removed the recalled and removed the contaminated lettuce. So, you know, we can only really go off that statement. But this is ongoing. So,
sure.
So I can't be the one to say whether it's safe or not.
Fair enough. We'll just have to see. Yeah. Yes. Taco Bell says they are, but she should crunch at her own risk. That's what it sounds
like.
Okay. And Dr. Fagans, you talked about this lettuce being chopped up. Do you think people can feel generally safe eating produce from local growers or from their own gardens if they, you know where the water is coming from and that sort of thing?
That does tend to be the trend. And if you think about cyclospora is a basically a tropical disease. So if you think about if your produce comes from the tropical area, then it's at higher risk. And so it would suggest that local produce, and it's not a bad thing to support your local growers anyway, but nonetheless, you would think that would be the case.
Okay. Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. I have been talking with Hamilton County Public Health Medical Director, Dr. Stephen Fagans, and New York Times health reporter Caroline Hopkins-Legaspi. Thank you both so much for your time today. I know you're both incredibly busy. I really appreciate your making time for this conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. And if you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for our weekly news review. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.